We'd just emerged onto a major thoroughfare lined with shops, Durban's equivalent of Oxford Street. The pavements were thronged with passers-by, browsing the wares in the windows. Him, for example, I pointed to a beefy, khaki-clad Boer who was coming the other way. Taking the initiative, I hailed him, saying, "My good man, we are rather lost. Can you tell us where we might find the High Commissioner's residence?"
"Britishers, eh?"
the slab-faced fellow said. His features settled into a sneer.
"In case you don't remember, we've just fought a couple of wars against you people. Why should I help you?"
"Common decency," I said.
"The same decency your Lord Kitchener showed when he ordered Boer farms torched. The same decency that led to 20,000 of us dying in British camps."
The man spat at my feet.
"That's what you can do with your common decency. Find your own way, damn you, and be grateful that I don't give the lot of you the drubbing you deserve."
"Please, sir," Wolfgang blurted out, "these men are holding me against my will. I'm a German sailor, as you can see from my uniform."
"German, eh?
They've threatened to shoot me. You must protect me." Our plan was in danger of unraveling. I'd not anticipated that the Boer would be quite so hostile towards us, or that Wolfgang would pluck up the nerve to throw himself to the man's mercy. Wolfgang was calling Holmes's bluff over the rifle. He knew my friend would not use the gun on him.
"Is this true?"
the Boer said, rounding on Holmes and gesturing at the weapon.
"Not a bit of it. I apologize that we have troubled you. We must be going. Good day."
We moved off, Holmes taking Wolfgang gently but firmly by the elbow and nudging him forwards.
"A poor choice, Watson," he muttered to me. "You should have left it to me. I was hoping to interrogate someone a bit more sophisticated and a lot less antagonistic."
How was I to know he harboured such a dislike of our nation?
"A man like him, with the rough hands and sunburned complexion of a farmer. Of course he would hate the British. I would be very surprised if he wasn't among the guerrilla bands who harried our troops so relentlessly."
"Well, no harm done," I said, breezily looking over my shoulder. The Boer was watching us walk away, scratching his head. I saw puzzlement on his face and a growing sense that something was seriously amiss.
"Wait!"
he called out. Holmes quickened his pace and the rest of us followed suit.
"Come back here!"
The Boer began lumbering after us. The enmity of his race towards the British disposed him to think the worst of us anyway. Wolfgang's entreaty had merely lent his weight to that bias.
"Pardon me, ladies, but we must go faster," said Holmes to the women.
We broke into a run, or at least five of us did. Wolfgang balked, requiring Holmes to pull him along.
"Boy," I warned him, "come on now, don't resist."
Wolfgang dug in his heels all the harder. Holmes relinquished his grip on the lad.
"We may as well leave him. He's outlived his usefulness."
By now the Boer had begun raising a hue and cry. Heads were turning. His fellow South Africans were becoming agitated.
"Stop them!"
the Boer bellowed.
"They're British, and they're up to something crooked!"
Our group carried on running, now minus Wolfgang. None of us, save perhaps Holmes, could be described as being at the peak of fitness. My age told against me, as did the debilitation brought on by weeks of inactivity in the belly of the U-boat. The three women, although they had youth on their side, were similarly weakened by incarceration, and of course Miss Smythe was generally in poor shape, for all that the worst effects of her illness had been ameliorated. In short order, she was out of breath, her pace faltering. Mrs. Cummings and Miss Grady caught hold of her arms and bore her along with them, but she could barely set one foot in front of the other. Eventually, inevitably, she stumbled and fell.